There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
So Annabelle Cantario is with us in the studio. She's a journalist and she's an author. Her books include Coming Home, The Disappearance and The One That Got Away, which I blame you for a serious amount of like lack of sleep for reading that. I couldn't put that one down.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. You have a fourth one on the horizon, don't you?
I do. It's out next month. It's called I Know You.
And tell us a little bit about that one.
I can't give too much away, okay. Otherwise it will be a spoiler, but it's about a lady who overshares her life on the internet and then all the trouble that gets her into.
So you can't overshare the synopsis on the radio because that would get you
exactly
in. Right. Okay. And when will it be out?
It's out on June the 28th.
And where will we be able to buy it? All decent bookshops?
All decent bookshops, yes. And online, of course.
So you're here on your Castaway Island. And what's the first book that you've brought with you?
The first book is going to be Us by David Nichols. A nice light read because I think that on the desert island. I mean, am I stranded or am I on holiday?
It's whatever you want it to be. Now, I'm glad you mentioned this to me the other day because I, like you, find it difficult to reread books.
Ah, okay.
So I understand where you're coming from because I remember you said that you find it quite difficult to pick things that you would reread over and over again.
Yeah, I do. I never reread books. So the thought of being on a desert island and having to only have three books is like a nightmare, actually.
So when you picked these, where were you coming from when you chose them?
Well, you gave me a clue. You said something life-changing. So my non-fiction was life-changing. And my second choice, am I allowed to say what that is now or not?
Yes.
Well, it's Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, because I could probably keep reading that book over and over. And then Us I chose just because it's light and entertaining.
Have you read Us?
Yes, I absolutely loved it. And we've had the pleasure of having the wonderful author of Us, Chris David Nichols. I was going to say Christopher Robin. No, sorry. David Nichols, he's been to the festival twice, and what an amazing man. And I loved, I mean, I know One Day was a mega, mega hit, and particularly because of the film, but I actually loved Us more. And it is these two disparate characters who are married and then have, you know, they're going through teenage years with their son. And it's told through the eyes of the husband, and I don't know how he does it, but you really you have great sympathy for him, but you also have great sympathy for the other two. Would you say
he's very clever? I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like this book so much, because it's not only light and entertaining and funny, but it's incredibly cleverly written, and the chapters are very short comic chapters that keep you engaged. But it, like you say, Isabel, through his eyes you see what the wife must be suffering and how frustrated the son must be.
And there are certain things that really sort of I can remember very well, because I read it, I must have been, when, you know, maybe 3 years ago, but I actually remembered the scene where he comes home from work and his wife and son, when his son's little, it's the glitter. She's got this, you know, he comes back to the place where they live. He's a scientist. He's very meticulous. And he is just so dismayed by the kitchen mess he comes back to. There's probably no meal. There is glitter all over the place. And he can't see why it would be wrong for him to be hypercritical and spoil the wonderful time that his wife and child were having.
That's funny. One of my favourite scenes is when they're travelling in Europe, because so we haven't done the synopsis yet, have we?
Do you want to
go for it? Basically, after 30 years of marriage, Douglas Peterson, who's the character, his wife wakes him up in the night and says that basically she thinks their marriage has run its course. And he thinks that she's waking him up to say there are burglars. And there's a very funny, this is right on the first page, and he sort of says, no, I think it's just the water pipes. And she says, what are you talking about? I just told you I want to leave you, you know. And then he says, neither of us got any sleep that night. But the problem is she wants to leave him, but they've already booked a grand tour holiday for a month through Europe with their teenage son, who's 17, because they want to sort of introduce him to all the Renaissance culture of Europe before he goes off to university. And the wife, Connie, is very unwilling to cancel this holiday. So she says, well, come on, let's go on this make or break holiday and see at the end of the month whether we're going to stay together or not. The scene I always remember is where they're in, I think it's Amsterdam, and he accidentally knocks a motorbike. There's this sort of bikers group in a drinking den called Valhalla, and they've got these classic motorbikes parked outside, and he staggers and knocks one, and they all fall over like dominoes and get absolutely wrecked. And all these drunken motorcyclists come rushing out wanting to kill him, basically. And it's just told so well. Mm. It goes on for quite a few pages, or I would read it out to you, but it's very funny.
The jellyfish. So that's when really there is a sort of a... it has been very, very difficult for him, no matter how hard he tries with his son. And it's not through lack of love or want of trying, but he just gets it so wrong. And then they're on this very crowded beach together, and he goes off into the sea for a swim, and then gets attacked. I'm laughing. I mean, it's not actually a laughing matter, but the way he writes it, you can just imagine the scene. And you know, it's when something horrific happens, and actually you think, oh my goodness, you laugh because it's so ridiculous. So... He almost gets killed by, umpteen jellyfish stings. But his son at that time becomes the hero. So there are some wonderful moments through it all. I mean, there's a lot of pathos, but there's also a lot of humour. And it's just a beautifully described journey of where two people are so mismatched. And really, you wonder if they'll ever get over get over the differences between how they are.
The thing about David Nichols, I found, whatever he writes, he makes it look so easy. So, I mean, this was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize.
Longlisted for the Man Booker
in 2014.
Which is probably one of the least dense books ever to have made it onto the Booker Prize. And I think that was in credit to his incredible writing, his clever writing, of describing this descent, really, and how much, no matter how much he tried, and it's that he does so well, that it's not through lack of trying, but that is not enough in this case.
Yeah. I like the way as well that he weaves the past story, the backstory, into the current action, and you don't ever feel that you're being told backstory. That's an incredible skill that he's got there, because usually if there's too much backstory, you get a bit bored as a reader. But you don't even realize that he's doing it in this book, and suddenly you know the whole world that's encompassed this marriage that's now sort of on the rocks, and without actually realizing how you know the history. That's a very clever thing that he does in this book that I really enjoyed.
He creates a seamless tapestry. I came to this one first, actually. This was my first David Nichols book that I ever read, and I read One Day afterwards because I was so hooked by this. And I was reading a few reviews of it just to see what people thought of One Day and Us, and obviously a lot of people find One Day is very close to their heart because it's like the first David Nichols book that they read, or it was so popular at the time. And I noticed there's a kind of a complete role reversal in Us. So in One Day you've got the man who's quite hedonistic and carefree, and the woman is the female character is quite structured, and with this it's completely reversed. So Doug is the one who's quite set in his ways, and Connie is the one who's full of life and wants to live more freely. And I thought it was an interesting kind of switch that he did there.
It is interesting. I think I loved One Day as well. I mean, I read it first and absolutely raced through it, loved it to bits. But I think that books, so, and this is another reason I had a problem choosing my three books. I think certain books call to you at certain times of your life. And One Day is obviously, I think, a younger book because they start at university and they're starting out as, young people in the world, whereas Us is probably the stage that I'm now coming up to with a teenager at home suddenly. And not that I'm planning on, saying to my husband that I want to leave him or anything, but...
That would be a terrible bombshell to drop.
No,
on
I really radio. Didn't mean it that. I think he's probably listening to
it. It's that time, isn't it?
So
and the difficult teenage years, and how parents respond to dealing with teenagers, because it's not easy. It's never easy.
Yeah, I suppose at my stage of life, I found more to interest me in Us than in One Day. Although I read One Day looking back at my university years and fondly, basically.
Yes.
Castaway. What's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
And now we're moving on to your second book on the island. This is non-fiction.
It's non-fiction, yes. It's called The Passion Test by Janet Bray Atwood and Chris Atwood, who I believe were married but aren't anymore.
Ooh.
Best friends now.
Maybe David Nichols should write their story.
And it's called, the tagline is The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Life Purpose.
And why have you chosen this for the island?
Well, you did tell me to choose life-changing books, and this book, I honestly think, changed my life.
How?
Which sounds a bit melodramatic, doesn't it? But I am an author.
No, but there are books that do change your life. I firmly believe that. Isabel, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I love books like this, and so you can do the test online. It doesn't cost anything. And then they send you an email, and once you know what your passions are, and then you can do sort of further research on it. And it sort of is looking at, are you actually giving enough time to what you're passionate about, or are you being completely overwhelmed by the daily drudgery of life? And I think that it's a total eye-opener, but also they recommend you do it every 6 months. So it's not a you do it today and your life is sorted. It is a continuous rebalancing of where you are spending your time. And if you're not spending it with your passion, then what are you doing, really?
That's exactly it in a nutshell, actually. So I read it in 2010. At that point, I was working for The Telegraph as a journalist. I had two small children, and I wanted to be an author and write novels. And if you asked me what I was doing, I'd be saying, yes, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book one day. I'm thinking about writing a book. And then my friend bought me this book for my birthday, The Passion Test. And I never read self-help books. So I sort of thought, you know, why have you brought me this? And she said, Annabelle, I think you probably need to read this book. So I sat down and read it. I did The Passion Test. And I realized that for all my love of writing fiction, I never actually made time to do it. And my, like Isabel said, my attention was all over the place on the family, the children, the school pickups and 100 other things, but not actually on writing fiction. And the essence of the book is it tells you, if you want something badly enough, focus some attention and some time on it, and then it will start to come to you. So I made time to start writing fiction, and then we all know what happened after that.
Yeah,
I entered the competition.
You won the Monte Grappa Fiction Prize, and you're now on you're about to publish your fourth book.
Yeah, and I'm working on my fifth book, and
yes.
I have to put it all back to reading this book and realizing that simple realization that I didn't spend enough time working on what I actually wanted, and then it all crystallized after this.
So I'm going to get the actual book, the physical book, but you can go online, just put in The Passion Test, and you can do the test. And you end up at the end of it, I suppose it took me about 15-20 minutes, with your five most things in your life that you're passionate about. And then you do another test which says, you know, how much of your time are you spending on all of these things? So it's quite analytical, and it's all about making a choice. So you narrow it down each time, you know, amongst what you've chosen as your 15 passions, that then comes down to your most, you know, the thing you're most passionate about, and then everything else. And then you get an email from them thanking you for doing that and giving you excuse me, an online, you can go on and do it. It's called, I think, iGenius or something like that, to sort of help you through the process of waking up in the morning and just being on autopilot, because that's what you do, you know, whether it's dropping the children at school, all of these things that we have to do in our daily lives. It makes you stop and have a think about it. And they do, you know, they do help you through this process. And I think it is, looking at all the reviews online, it is life-changing. So a fantastic book to take to the desert island.
Because I'm supposed to reread it every 6 months.
And redo the test every 6 months to see, are you on track? Have your passions changed? That could happen. You know, someone maybe didn't have children when they did the test, but then once you've got a child in your life, your whole life will be a different... So can we ask, what is your number one passion, or is it secret?
Oh, I think it's divided between writing and family. Basically,
yes.
It boils down to those two things. So if I'm not doing one, I'm doing the other.
Yeah, so that's good. Mine was family first, and I think it was learning was the second for me.
Okay. Teaching as well, actually.
I had teaching, so I had those were there. My first five, I'd got teaching and learning, which was quite. It's funny to think that you could want that you could be passionate about both, but I just look on. I mean, I've now got four grandsons and another one on the way. And when I'm thinking about passing things on, that is, in a way, it's teaching, it's sharing things that you love with the next generation. For me, is hugely. And I mean, we had a great example in Mr. Andrew of you know, the teaching and what an amazing job he is doing, getting children reading for pleasure.
Oh, that was actually, you've answered a couple of my questions there, because I was wondering, when it lists the kind of passions that you're passionate about, what the categories are. So it's things like learning, it's things like teaching.
There's a whole group, and from that group you choose 15, and then you narrow that down over a series of between this and this. And it's really quite difficult because you're making a, you know, it's like saying, would you put this as your favourite food or that? If you've only got two, it's easier to make a decision. So,
yeah,
you're going to have to do it, Annabelle. You're going to have to do it.
Probably take me ages to decide between two bits of food. I wouldn't be able to do that. The structure of the physical book. So I know you can do the online test of the passion test. Is it kind of interactive? Is there stuff that you have to fill in? How is it structured?
There are a couple of forms inside the book that you can fill in lists, but I never really write in books. So I did it separately on paper.
Mm. That makes sense.
I'd say that the passion test online is probably well worth doing. And maybe it wasn't available then. And then go and get the physical book, because you do need actually then help and assistance and guidance to become, you know, a person who's focused on your passion. So I think it's a fantastic book, and thank you, because I'd never heard of it.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thank you to my friend who bought it for me.
Yes. We were talking about the passion test, and Annabelle was given this book as a birthday present, and she wondered why in the world was anyone giving her this kind of book, because it's not the kind of book that you normally read. But you read it and it changed your life, and you put down where you wanted to see yourself in 5 years' time. So can you share what your outlandish dreams were in 2010?
I wrote down these five things, which just fell out of the book when I picked it up for this show, and I had a look and laughed, because when I wrote them down, they did seem like completely out there. So number one, my goals were, I am a successful novelist. And number two, I've published 3 or more books. I'm now on number 5. I speak at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, which I've done several times. I have my own website. I don't know why that seems such a big thing, but it did back in 2010, and I do. And I help people by teaching writing courses, which I've done in schools and at the Festival of Literature as well. So all things ticked.
Oh, I think we're all going to be rushing out to get our copy of the Passion Test and make sure. I think it was a really good thing that you wrote down there and then, following having gone through the book and all the exercises, that you wrote down where, no matter how outlandish they seem, you managed to achieve them. And that reminds me of Chris Hadfield, the Canadian astronaut, who decided when he was 9 years old, he was watching the first man land on the moon as a 9-year-old, and he decided that he was going to be an astronaut. You know, it was just a single vision, and he did absolutely everything he could to get to that goal. So the passion test for us all, I think.
Yeah. And on that note, I just want to introduce the seagulls again on the cast.
Castaway, what's your literary sustenance on a desert island?
Sorry, I just really like the seagulls. So what's book three?
Book three is a very famous book, Rebecca, by Daphne du Maurier.
I'm not surprised you chose this, but tell us why.
Well, I'm slightly embarrassed to say that I had never read it until this year. It's one of those books that you kind of think you've read, but when I actually picked it up, I realised that I hadn't read it, and I've probably been talking about it to other people as if I had read it, but I hadn't read it. So I read it in February, and I couldn't put it down. It was just the most amazingly, amazingly well-written and interesting and haunting story. I still think about it. I still think about what those people are getting up to, where they are and why. But it's been voted number 14 of the nation's best loved novels by the BBC on their the Big Read survey. It was published 80 years ago this year, so it's just had its 80th anniversary, and it still sells 4,000 copies a month or a quarter, I forget which. Well, it sells a lot still.
All I have here is that basically it's never gone out of print, and that it sold nearly 3 million copies between its publication in 1938 and 1965. That's the only figure I've got.
Interestingly, I was reading that it was kind of mismarketed when it was first published, because it was marketed as a romance, which really annoyed the author, because it's, I think I've got a quote here. I just, hold on, I'm going to have to look for my quote.
One of those million copies that have been purchased of Rebecca is actually me, and like you, I've been meaning to read it for so long, and I finally bought the copy, but as long as you don't spoil it for me, I think we'll be fine, because it's still waiting on my bedside table.
Can I give you that quote? I found it now. She apparently, the author, she was under no illusions as to the bleakness of what she had written, and she wrote to her publisher, "It's a bit on the gloomy side, and the ending is brief and a bit grim." So it was not a romance at all. And I think that's, in the beginning, it wasn't that popular because it was being sold as a romance when it wasn't a romance, really.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about the plot without the spoiler at the end for Annabelle? Although I don't think it would ruin it, but we won't do that.
Sure. It's written in the first person from the view of a narrator whose name we never find out, which I also didn't really realise until I thought about it, because you feel that you know that character incredibly well, but you don't know who she is. And basically she's in a companion to an old lady staying in Monte Carlo when she meets a very rich bachelor called Maxime de Winter. And she ends up marrying him and going back to Cornwall, where he owns a very impressive house called Manderley. And she becomes the mistress of the house, but she's haunted by his dead his dead wife, his first wife, who's passed away. And she basically builds up this imagination of what this woman was like and tortures herself with it. I don't want to say any more without spoiling it for you, Annabelle.
And it's Mrs. Danvers, who's one of the most... Yes. Frightening characters that's ever been invented.
She's
the housekeeper. Yeah.
Considering the genre of the fiction that you write, was she a real inspiration when you came to write your own novels?
Well, she wasn't, because I hadn't read the book.
Oh, yes, of course.
Everyone said to me, oh, you write like Rebecca, and I was thinking, I must read that. I only wish I could write like her. Yeah.
Is this one that you do think that you would read again and again?
Or? Yes, definitely. I could read that over and over just for her descriptions and her sense of place. And I think the story has many different levels that you perhaps don't spot on your first reading, because now I've read a little about the story.
That is the sign of a magnificent book, is the ones that you can return to again and again, and every time you pick up something new, because we sort of settle into a pattern when we're reading, and it's not that we skim, but that's what I find with books that I've returned to that I love, that each time it's a new experience and I notice something else.
I'm finding that at the moment with The Turn of the Screw. And one of the previous cast, I guess, was Kate Moss. And this is how I actually ended up reading it, was because she recommended The Turn of the Screw as the one thing that she would read it again and again and again. And you never quite get to the bottom of what actually happened. There are so many different possibilities. And every time she reads it, it's something new. So that's what I've been reading at the moment. And it's reminding me of that a little bit.
So those are your three books on your desert island.
I'm sorry it was such a difficult thing for you to choose.
It was really hard because
two of them, you're getting off, all right? You're getting off your surfboard or however else Annabelle sends you out to your desert island. And unfortunately, two fall in and are eaten by sharks. Okay, what is the one that you would want to be sure that you'd grabbed onto tight and the shark didn't
see,
get
she's
it?
She's mean.
It would be Rebecca, because I would have memorised the passion test by then, so I could keep doing that over and over.
Good choice. I think that it is always going to be, it's that one book that you know will give you sustenance, reading sustenance. So I think that's a fantastic choice.
Well, seeing as we've got a little bit more time, what's yours?
My favourite book.
The one that you would take with you.
It would be For Whom the Bell Tolls by Ernest Hemingway.
I hear you speak a lot about it.
Have you read it?
No.
Okay. Why have you not read it?
No, I mean...
Why have you not read it?
Why have I not read
it? Because I read it when I was a teenager and I have never got over it. I have never got over that book. It's really not a short book, but it's what happens in reality over 4 days, but there's a real backstory to it, so there's a lot of politics in it and things like that. And when I first read it, that first reading, I would have skimmed over that, I know, definitely, because I was so gripped. But it's the characterization, it's the characters in there, and I believe that they were absolutely based on people he met, you know, sort of having done a bit of research on it, so they were instantly believable as characters. And like most of his books, there's not really a happy ending at all. You don't know what happens to them after that. But it was so, you know, you talk about romance or love stories, but there is a love story in there which, although it only happened over a very short space of time, would have been at the height of what anyone could do. And his descriptions are sort of almost devoid of adjectives. And again, I just marvelled at his writing. So I might have read it 30, 40 times, but every time I go back, I will find something new to marvel about Ernest Hemingway.
So yeah, mark of a good book, something always new to find in it, no matter what point in your life you read it. But you said that you read it at a, how old were you?
I was probably 17.
Do you think if you'd have read it now, it would have struck you the same way?
I think books that we read as children or when we're first being introduced to great literature. So I was taking English literature at A-level, and we had three teachers, but the one teacher was focused on much more on modern classics. And in those far gone days, this was a modern classic already. And I was reading Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Steinbeck. We read, you know, Orwell and Hemingway, D.H. Lawrence, all of those. And so I was having a huge amount of wonderful, wonderful books that we just got through. And I was an avid reader, and I always have been. But that is the one that really, really, I think, captivated me. And I can't even remember why, but I can't get over it. I can't get over the impact that book had on me. Did you read a book as a teenager that has stayed with you?
Yeah. Oh, you put me on the spot now. I'm sure I did, yes. I had a children's book, though, which was called The Stream That Stood Still. And it was a magical story about something that happened underneath the water of a stream with witches and fish. And I just was enchanted
gone back,
by it.
As you're talking, you've actually gone back to where you were. That is the thing that happens. Mine was The Secret Garden. And again, I can take myself back to where I was when I read that book. And I was probably 7 at the time.
I can't think of one. I can't think of one.
We'll give you a break on that.
Thank you so much to Annabelle for coming on the show. We release you from the desert island.
Thank you.
I hope you didn't get sunburn. We loved having you there.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.